From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm your host, Kennedy Vincent. Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. From the popular 1988 movie Rain Man to more modern shows like Love on the Spectrum and The Big Bang Theory, autism spectrum disorder has been getting a lot more attention in American society.
Sally, dips, Sally. 4610-0192.
How did you know my phone number?
How'd you know that?
She said read the telephone book last night. Dibs Sally. 4610-0192.
He remembers things, little things sometimes.
Very clever, boys. I'll be right back.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. I'm sorry to see your face, Kian.
So you guys are still together?
Yes, we are.
How would you describe your ideal partner?
Oh, I'm not sure if we have that much time.
A girl who's very talkative, like me, and a girl who eats nicely.
Has a very nice giggle and smile.
Witty.
Penny.
What's up, Buttercup?
You have to get rid of the chair.
Nope.
Yet a majority of what popular media is missing is BIPOC representation.
It's not a white disorder. It's a disorder that anyone could have. Autism doesn't discriminate because it doesn't. It doesn't just pick one group of people. A lot of people are autistic.
According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, about 1 in 36 children have been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. Although a study released in 2025 by the CDC shows an increase in ASD diagnosis of BIPOC children, communities of color still have less access to resources than their white counterparts. Today on Dialogue, we learn more about the signs and realities behind autism through conversations with two families, a Michigan mom who saw a need and filled the gap in BIPOC care, and a local family who wrote a children's book to teach others. So what is autism spectrum disorder, or ASD? According to the National Institute of Mental Health, it's a neurological and developmental disorder that affects how people interact with others, communicate, learn, and behave. Although autism can be diagnosed at any age, it is described as a developmental disorder because symptoms generally appear in the first 2 years of life. And what does it mean to be neurodivergent? Well, neurodiversity is a framework for understanding human brain function. It considers the diversity within sensory processing, motor abilities, and social comfort. For example, this includes autism as well as diagnoses like ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is a chronic condition that includes attention difficulty, hyperactivity and impulsiveness, and dyslexia, which the Cleveland Clinic describes as a learning disability that disrupts how your brain processes written language, and more under this umbrella. The counter to this would be neurotypical, which is a person with no cognitive disability. So, autism is a spectrum, meaning that not every child or adult with autism will look or behave the same. Camille Proctor learned this along the way of raising her son, and to help every family get resources, she founded the Color of Autism Foundation. Her organization is deeply committed to fostering inclusivity and support for African-American families navigating the world of autism. Camille is based in Detroit, but her services are available over the internet nationwide. Camille created the organization after she felt a lack of representation in popular autistic community spaces. As she raised questions about the truth of the reality that Black and Brown autistic children face, she felt alienated and ostracized in these groups, whether it's police brutality, systematic racism, and overall stigmas of having a disability. She knew families of color needed a voice.
I had my son in 2006, and I started to notice when he was about one that I didn't feel like he was developmentally at where he should be. And so I was tracking it based on the milestones that they say you should have and all of these other things. And I said, you know what? Something's not right. But what kept happening is I kept being told that boys are delayed and I really wasn't getting anywhere. And then he also didn't have what they called at the time, what they said the signs were of autism, which is like he made eye contact, but he only made eye contact with women. And so no one noticed that.
A developmental pediatrician confirmed that her son was autistic. Her next challenge, finding support systems that understood the challenge of raising a Black child on the spectrum.
I thought that would make me feel better, but it didn't because I didn't have a community. So I started going out to, you know, find like places and groups where I could get advice for this autism. I landed in spaces where people didn't look like me. And so when I would ask questions, like what's going to happen when he's like 12, you know, Black children are always perceived to be older than they really are. You know, what's going to happen? And they were effectively like, no, nothing's going to happen. And I'm like, yeah, but like if he is still nonverbal and he's approached by the police, he could get hurt. And they're like, no, because officers know that there's autistic people and they won't hurt him. And I was just like, I got to go. But prior to me deciding to leave, they just kicked me out because I was a Debbie Downer because I was always asking these questions that were specific to the Black population and they just didn't get it. So I decided to start my own organization. And that didn't go without things, too, because, you know, in my own community, we had people who literally wanted me to, you know, if my child was acting a certain way, if he was having a struggle, whatever day it was, people would say, oh, he needs a spanking and he needs this and he needs that. And so I had to take it upon myself to really educate the community about what autism is and isn't. You know, it's not a white disorder. It's a disorder that anyone could have, which is why, you know, on our website, it says autism doesn't discriminate because it doesn't. It doesn't just pick one group of people. A lot of people are autistic. So that's where the journey kind of started. What we do with the Color of Autism Foundation, we think that the most powerful tool families can have is information. So we focus on parent training, community trainings, and really helping them understand how to be responsive to the needs of their loved ones, understanding that their inaction can cause a bad reaction in their loved one's futures. So for example, you have a loved one who, what I like to call escalated behavior, because it could be something that is just bothering them. But we teach parents how to find out what these triggers are so they can be responsive and kind of de-escalate what's going on. Like if you have a little kid that doesn't like to wear clothes and she's always taking off her clothes, you need to say, well, what is she wearing and why is she taking it off? And if you realize that she's always taking off her clothes when she has on jeans, then she doesn't like to wear jeans. So we need to put on joggers or some soft clothes. If you have someone that doesn't like loud noises, perhaps we can try some ear defenders to kind of defend out the background noises and sound. Redirecting behaviors. If someone likes to bite their hand when they get anxious, give them something that they can actually bite, that they won't harm themselves or others.
Color of Autism helps families know their rights in schools, and adults on the spectrum know their rights in the workplace. And she has a special focus on law enforcement.
You have to take these families and these law enforcement officers and have them work on projects together because you have to humanize both parties. You know, police are people and these families are people. And if you don't have a point of reference when you're out there as a cop, to think back to, you're not going to be inclined to think about that 2-hour lunch and learn with the donuts. But what you will remember is a kid named Jeremy you met, and you'll remember that Jeremy likes to do something called stimming. And when he stims, he flaps his hands. And so you'll know that when someone who's out on the street flapping their hands is doing that, that they're stimming and they're not someone that you should shoot for flapping their hands. You know, so there's a lot of things that we do, but the biggest thing is we want to inform the community because we want to build the community that we want to see. We think that community should be inclusive by design, not an after fact. So for us, autism-friendly stuff doesn't really resonate because it should just be embedded in every community. Like, communities should know who autistic people are. Places and spaces should already be accommodating in their design for autistic people. We don't think that things should be separate. Like, you know, they have autistic friendly movies. It's not autism friendly if you got to get up at 6 o'clock to go to a 7 a.m. movie. But if you make accommodations like ear defenders and soft lights and soft sounds, everyone can enjoy it. There's not then one accommodation made for a person with a disability that's harmed one without. So these are the types of things that we advocate for.
And I know that you're physically located in Detroit, Michigan, but you do virtual trainings across the country for free. You've reached over 12,000 people and families. What has that journey been like?
Yeah, it's been interesting. And so we've come in contact with probably over 12,000 people, but we've only trained about 1,211 families throughout the course of what I like to call COVID, because we started our parent training in COVID. But I'm happy for a number of things that I was able to do. I'm happy that I was able to pivot with the help of self-advocates, because I think if I want to give anyone their flowers, I would think it would be self-advocates, because, you know, parents for years were so afraid of the self-advocate. And self-advocacy has really changed over the years, because now those people are parents. And now some of them have children who are on the spectrum. And it's helped me have a better view of how to lead an organization. And that's really why we focus so much on education and responsiveness to individuals, because we found that behaviors don't start overnight. You can work on them when they're young, so that when they're older, it's not escalated to the point where you're dialing 911 and possibly signing your child's death certificate because you weren't able to control something in your own home, which I know sounds bad, but that's just the reality. Police aren't crisis interventionists. I just need to throw that in.
A note for the audience. When we talk about the difference in treatment for BIPOC individuals with autism versus their white counterparts, it's not just about a lack of representation or resources. It's also about safety. According to a report by the Ruderman Family Foundation, almost half of the people who are killed by police have some kind of disability. Officers are often called into emergencies where urgent care may be more appropriate than lethal force.
I think that it's important that parents and caregivers be very adamant about who they are as people and what your culture is. And, you know, it's important to have that candor and that communication with people that provide services to you so that they can better understand that, for example, you have a grandmother. She's never heard of autism. We got to get granny in the loop. Ways to get granny in the loop. We're Muslim. We can only use our left hand for certain things. You shouldn't be embarrassed to say that. If whatever religion you are, if you say, well, before we eat, we like to say our prayers, or we like to say a prayer. We would like for our child to learn how to say a prayer. Or if they're non-speaking, we just want them to learn how to just close their eyes and put their hands together while we're saying our prayer. There's simplistic things that you can add. I mean, and those are little things, but then there's also things that are real serious. Like, my child is Black, and we have to learn how to help him cope when he goes out in public. You know, if he's in a busy area where he might get overstimulated, how do we teach him how to de-escalate and regulate himself? You know, not us regulate him, him thinking to himself, okay, these are the tools they provided me. Let me think. Maybe I could do some deep breathing. Maybe I can do whatever. I mean, my son has to do it all the time. You know, he'll feel himself getting overwhelmed, and I'll hear him chanting, Ari, breathe, Ari, breathe. And we always have a running joke because, you know, often autistic people speak of themselves in third person, and my son absolutely does that. And so there's a lot of things, but I just think that it's important for you to understand the culture of the people that you're working with. And I say this to practitioners, you know, if you have a family that's an immigrant family and they're new to this country, and you're working with them, with their child, and you only speak English and you're speaking English to the child is going back home to a non-English speaking parent. That's breaking the communication between them. And so you have to figure out how to make things work for these families to be more responsive to what their needs are in each household. And it doesn't matter what color they are. It just means that you need to make sure that you are culturally understanding what is a necessity in that household.
I will always love you how I do. Let go of a prayer for you, just a sweet word. The table is prepared for you. Ooh. Wishing you Godspeed, glory. There will be mountains you won't move. Still, I'll always be there for you. How I do.
Autism awareness has come a long way over the generations to where now more conversations are happening in online spaces, school settings, and at home around it. But as Camille's story shows, there's still a long way to go in treatment and awareness being intersectional. The Robertson family in Champaign created their own solution to this problem of representation, a children's book titled Jero's Journey. Though autism is a spectrum and not everyone with autism behaves the same, their goal with the book is to provide alternative ways to communicate with children diagnosed on the spectrum. They actually did a read-along of the book with Illinois Public Media. Here's the father and son, Dr. Prince Robertson and Jeremiah Robertson, reading a part of the book.
Jero's Journey, Finding Hope in Autism, written by Jeremiah Robertson, Mallory Robertson, and myself, Prince Robertson, illustrated by Nicole Stowers.
To my Granny Barb, who showed me that even though I have a disability, I'm still able. For those who struggle to be understood, for those who struggle to understand. Hi, my name is Jeremiah, but my family calls me Jero. I'm in 7th grade, and wow, do I have some stories to tell. Well, first of all, I have autism. That means I'm a little different. I have a hard time communicating, and I get really emotional when I'm misunderstood.
Autism spectrum disorders is like an umbrella. There are so many people who have autism, but everyone under the umbrella is different. One thing that people on the spectrum have in common is that we have some struggles with the following: communication, social interactions, cognition or understanding, repetitive behaviors. But having struggles doesn't limit what a person with autism is able to do.
One thing about my autism is that I have a good memory. I think back to when my Granny Barb bought me my first keyboard.
She knew I liked music because I would hum Jesus Loves Me whenever I was sad, anxious.
Having a keyboard really helped me calm down because I will always run around flapping my hands.
My mama and daddy knew I was different. I was only a year old and I didn't point, wave, and communicate effectively. But I would say the alphabet over and over.
D, E, F.
When I was younger, it was a bit different making friends. Sometimes it still is, but my parents and teachers helped me to communicate better. The friends that I have now are great. Some of them I've known since third grade.
My parents helped me a lot to understand the things that I'm going through. My mom would always say to me, "You're a little different, and that's okay. You were born to stand out. You will struggle with things that your friends might find easy, but you will overcome."
I don't have a hard time with everything. I enjoy learning how to code, play video games, and anything with technology. I recently started wrestling and I'm really into it.
I like repetition, so doing things over and over makes it easy for me, like music. I love music so much that I can play the piano, the cello, and I am now learning how to play the drums.
Here are some tips that might help you to help someone like me who is on the spectrum.
If possible, show me how to do something rather than tell me. Try to be aware of your tone of voice and facial expressions. It might get interpreted in a way that isn't meant. Please understand that I struggle with sarcasm. It's difficult to understand because I might take things the wrong way. Use of schedules and being consistent helps. Be patient and understanding. Please don't ask me a why question. It's hard for me to explain why I do the things I do. Try rephrasing it without using the word why.
I think deep down inside everyone wants to be accepted, understood, and encouraged. Being on the autism spectrum isn't such a bad thing. What do you like to do that helps you calm down? Here are some encouraging words that my mom and dad often tell me. Maybe it'll be helpful to you too. You are an overcomer. You were born to stand out. Mallory Nicole Robertson. My dad will always tell me, you weren't born to be ordinary. You were born to be extraordinary.
The most amazing feeling I feel. Words can't describe it, but feeling for real. Baby, I paint the sky blue. My greatest creation was you. You. Glory. Glory. Glory.
To learn more about their story off the page, I sat down with Mallory Robertson and her son, Jeremiah Robertson, in the studio.
I wasn't a parent already, so he was my first child, so I didn't know what to expect anyways. And so he would do things like sing and hum a lot. And so I didn't think anything was wrong with it. He was very intrigued about alphabets and things that lined up. And I just thought he was going to be amazingly smart. And when he didn't point and he didn't wave, I went to the doctor and I said, you know, he's not pointing and waving like other kids. And I said, oh, he's just a boy. He'll be okay. Well, then I seen friends and their children were doing things and I'm like, something isn't right. So I went to the doctor again and he wasn't really talking. He would say eat and he would grab my hand to go to the refrigerator. So he knew how to communicate how to eat. So when the doctor asked me, he said, well, don't worry. If he can communicate that he can eat, then he's fine.
After Mallory saw a literal sign at the health department for getting your child tested for developmental milestones, she found a team of specialists that finally took her concerns seriously. At around 1 year old, Jeremiah was diagnosed with autism.
Do you remember the first time you heard about autism, Jeremiah?
Well, first time I heard about autism was probably when I was in like preschool. Or preschool, kindergarten, first grade. That's pretty much what I heard about autism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't even think he knew what it was at that time. It was funny because YouTube had just came out back in 2005.
Yeah.
So maybe before then, but it was popular. And so I would look on YouTube and find videos explaining about autism. And do you remember it was a video? I always showed it to you. It was like a claymation video.
Mm. Yeah, I think I remember.
So, I mean, I couldn't explain to him that you have autism, you know, at 5 years old. I did my best, and what I tried to do was just let him know that he was different. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he might do quirky things, and I didn't want him to be embarrassed or singled out because he always wanted to be social, but he was kind of socially awkward, you know? Like, he'll see a group of kids playing and then he'll just go stand next to them. And it's like, go ask for the ball, you know, or something like that. And so I would tell him, like, okay, well, you know, you have autism. And so I did my best to educate people around us and tell them this is what this is. That is called stimming, you know, and things like that, to try to educate people so it wasn't so weird or that they didn't look at him any kind of way. So,
Jeremiah, you're in college now. What was school like for you?
It's different, way different than high school.
Well, what about high school?
It's the fact that I get to meet new people, especially outside of school.
You wrestled?
Yeah, sports.
Wrestled. I played in a band.
What instrument?
Bass drum.
Oh, okay.
Well, my freshman and sophomore year, I was front ensemble. I made drumline when I was a junior.
How was it like, and still today, just talking to people or like communicating and trying to make friends or build a community? What has that experience been like for you?
I feel like it's been getting better, especially when I'm in college.
Yeah.
Meeting more new people every now and then.
What do you have that shows people that you have autism? Because I just noticed your Instagram.
Yeah, my Instagram lets people know that I have autism.
And how important do you think that is to tell people around you?
I feel like that it's very important to tell people, let people know I have autism.
Do you think a lot of people in the world might not understand or even know that autism exists?
Yeah.
And what do you think about that?
I think that more people should know that autism is a thing.
One thing you said to me, he would say that people would ask, do you really have autism? Or you don't look like you have autism.
Yeah, some people look at me as normal. And if my autism, I'm real high functioning. So I really act, you know, normal as possible. I'm not all that offended that people tell me that I'm normal. I'm not. It don't bother me.
See, but it would bother me. And when he told me that, I was upset. But I'm like, you're not bothering me. He's like, no. And I'm like, well, you know, what does normal look like? And so I guess my idea is, do they think that he's supposed to have a physical disability because he's wrestling? Like, does he supposed to have some type of limitation? So it's difficult for me as a parent to hear, are you sure you got autism? You don't look like you have autism. And I'm always floored. I'm like, well, what does that even mean?
What do you wish people knew about other people who are on the spectrum?
I wish people knew that everyone's autism is different. I've met other people with autism too, and they act different.
So everybody's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As we wrap up today's conversation, we learn that every person's journey with autism is unique. And within BIPOC communities, these journeys carry both extraordinary strengths and distinct challenges. The importance of culturally responsive support, the power of community advocacy, and the resilience that emerges when families and communities come together is beyond powerful. To our listeners who are navigating autism within their own families, whether as parents, caregivers, or individuals on the spectrum themselves, know that your experiences matter, your voices deserve to be heard, and your needs deserve to be met. If you want to learn more about Camille Proctor and the resources provided by the Color of Autism Foundation, you can find them at thecolorofautism.org. And if you'd like to support the Robertson family and their book, you can find it on Amazon, Jero's Journey. For Dialogue, I'm Kennedy Vincent.